Only extreme measures destroyed the receiver and the machine. We don't have access to those measures, that scale of destructive power. The outsiders are here, and the only weapons that were effective against them are not in our arsenal. It's hopeless, Joe. Completely and utterly hopeless.
No, it's not.
Is this you giving me a cheesy pep talk, since there's no reason not to? Or is this you just being blindly stupid? This is me being smart. You know how to beat the outsiders? I preemptively call bullshit on that. I don't have a plan yet.
Baha!
That is nothing unusual. Come on, you know the pirates begin every mission without a clue how to win the fight. If it was that easy, some other unit would get the job. Yes, we begin every mission without you having a clue what to do, but this is different.
No, it's not.
It is. You say that every time.
Ugh,
you say that also. How can you be so calm? Is it? Oh, is it the cumulative brain damage? I did warn you that when I had to use those quashines, they could result in... I told you it's not brain damage. Denial. Another sign of impaired cognitive functions. This is worse than I... Will you shut up and listen for a moment? A moment in your slow monkey time while I have to watch your sad and inevitable decline? Just shut up, okay? You described the enemy as the outsiders. Yes, that is the closest translation of the term the elders used for the enemy from the distant galaxy your people designate as NCG-1023. NCG-1023, that's a mouthful. That place is the home of the outsiders? As far as the elders knew, yes. Why? We will call that galaxy the Outhouse. House of the Outsiders, get it? Yes, he chuckled. You military people insist on giving everything a nickname. It's a thing, Skippy. Okay, so, you said outsiders, as in more than one. That is not correct. We only saw one of them. Seriously? I am totally serious about this. Listen, NUMB skull. If you see one cockroach scurrying across the floor of your kitchen, I can guarantee there are others. Yes, but that logic doesn't apply to the outsider. Is this logic you're using something only a monkey could understand? It is cold, hard, solid logic, you ass. Think about it. If the outsider had access to a fleet of super advanced warships and magical energy to matter printers that can create anything it wants, then why did it need to steal an Elder Starship? A damaged, only partially functional Elder Starship that it wasn't able to fully repair? Why did it need to commandeer a battle group of Maxalt's warships? Why did it need fabricators to make a supply of Radonium? Why did it even need a freaking Sentinel at all? These are good questions, you agree?
Darn it, yes.
Do you have answers to any of those questions, or are you just going to run around screaming, "The sky is falling! The sky is falling!" I do not ever do that. You always do that.
Ugh, I can't even.
You can. You just don't want to. Skippy, you're not afraid of the outsider. You're afraid to hope. How the hell do you figure that? Giving in to fear is easy. You just accept there is nothing you can do. Doom is inevitable, so there is no point to you making any effort. If you dare to hope, then you risk your hopes getting crushed. Joe, you should work for those companies that make stupid motivational posters. The only person I care about motivating is you.
Great!
He threw his tiny hands in the air. You can start giving me hope by explaining how we will defeat a threat even the elders couldn't deal with. In the military, we have a saying. How do you eat a shit sandwich? One bite at a time. We don't need to begin an operation knowing how we will get to the end goal. We take it one step at a time. That's how we stop the elders from killing everyone in the galaxy. We nibbled away at the problem one bite at a time. We stopped that Echo AI from destroying Valkyrie, then you got the Elders to initiate a factory reset on all Elder AIs, then that part was not intentional. Well, sure, our plan was flexible enough to take advantage of opportunities as they presented themselves. He snorted. That is just a fancy way of saying we got lucky.
Eh?
It's inevitable that you will make mistakes, and so will your enemy. The key to success is to recognize when your enemy makes an unforced error and be ready and able to exploit that mistake to bring the proper resources to bear against the unexpected opportunity. Your actual plan is just to wait for the enemy to make a mistake?
Not always, but if it happens, you have to act fast. Listen, a touchdown when your defense intercepts a pass and runs it back for a score is 6 points for you, same as an offensive touchdown.
I suppose. How does any of your inspiring words help us defeat an enemy that was too tough for the elders?
My point is, we do the usual pirate thing of stumbling around until we find our way to a solution. When you told me the elders were coming back, I was scared out of my mind. Then, we tackled the problem one step at a time until we found a way to win. Let's do that here. Don't try to make a plan to beat the outsider. Don't even think about that. Start only by talking about what we know.
Which is nothing!
That's not true, and you know it. We know this entity, whatever it is, consists at least part of the time purely as energy.
Okay, we do know that. How does that bit of trivia help us to...
It's energy, Skippy. Coherent energy. It must have some sort of pattern. Could we disrupt that pattern?
I don't...
Can you get your ginormous brain to work on studying that issue?
Why not? He rolled his eyes. It's not like I have anything better to do. Is that all?
Not even close. We also know the outsider has limited resources and limited capabilities.
Exactly how do we know that?
It needed not just an Elder starship. It also took over several Maxolt's warships, and its purpose was to take control of a Sentinel. That tells us that it is capable of doing cyber-hacking stuff like you, and that it still needs physical means to achieve its goals. It is not capable of fully accomplishing whatever it wants when it is in its pure energy form.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
Also, we know the resources it can call on directly are limited. It has only itself. If there were other energy entities out there, it wouldn't have acted alone.
True.
And I just realized this as we were talking. We know that we don't yet understand its end objective. Taking over a Sentinel was only an interim step toward whatever its ultimate goal is.
Geez Louise, Joe, we do know its ultimate goal. To seize control of this galaxy and kill or enslave everyone.
Nah, that is the strategic goal of the Outsiders from NGC 1023. This thing here is working on some less sweeping tactical objective that allows its people, its command, to work toward probably the thing you said. Nothing good for us.
That's a safe bet.
I still don't see how any of this knowledge helps us. First, it helps us to think of the enemy as a thing that has a defined set of capabilities and limitations, rather than being some all-powerful bogeyman that frightens us so much we can't think clearly. Beyond that, we know it needs, or at least wants, a Sentinel, and that is a bit of actionable intelligence. There are limited opportunities for it to acquire a Sentinel. Yes, the next set of opportunities are greater than we can cover, but next time we won't have to act alone.
You hope that is true.
You don't make a plan for failure. We have time before the next set of opportunities for activating a Sentinel. We can prepare the battle spaces by disrupting most or all of the local spacetime in those locations. Create a resonance so the Sentinel there can't be contacted.
Doing that at so many locations will require a lot of radonium.
That is a problem that is merely difficult, not impossible.
There is also the complication that this far in advance, I don't know exactly where and when those Sentinel activation opportunities will be. I know, roughly, there are a lot of variables I can't predict right now, so the timing could be tricky.
Tricky we can work with.
Joe, are you saying that if we prevent the outsider from taking control of a Sentinel, we can stop it?
Stop it, or at least make it fall back to a less effective plan B.
But that won't kill it.
No. It might be the best we can do in the short or medium term is to manage the problem. Contain it. Limit the harm it can do by reducing the opportunities it has for... Mischief isn't the right word. You know what I mean.
I do know, and I hear you. What I don't know is how you propose to contain it. Unless you somehow lock down every starship in the galaxy, it will find a ride.
Will it? It had a sweet ride, an Elder starship, and you stomped that sucker flat. Now it's out there as pure energy. That has to limit what it can do, limit where it can operate. Hey! I snapped my fingers. It's a form of energy. Is it restricted by the speed of light? There are no star systems around the site where we-
Whoa! I never said it was limited to light speed.
You told us you detected a streak of light racing away from the Elder Starship just before.
There was a streak of light, actual photons. That was just a sort of skid mark on this layer of space-time. No, that form of energy can enter higher layers of space-time and travel significantly faster than light. Shit, I groaned, my confidence once again stomped flat by facts I hadn't known. How much faster? Can it jump? I saw no evidence that it can create anything like an Einstein-Rosen bridge. It has to travel through higher space-time, not create shortcuts. It can't skip all the boring parts in between, got it? I don't suppose higher space-time has stoplights. No. How about slow-moving, overloaded trucks that the outsider gets stuck behind on the space-time highway? Please be serious about this. How far can the outsider travel? That is unknown. Okay, how fast can it go? Also unknown. Your first question, about its range. I actually can make a guess. It... Give me a minute to think. Go do, I don't know, whatever monkeys do. Groom yourself. Groom myself? Like what, check my fur for fleas? How about you scrub that mustard stain off your uniform top? Just stop talking, okay? My new VIP office aboard Valkyrie wasn't conveniently close to the bridge, but it did have a small private bathroom, so I checked myself in the mirror. He wasn't joking. There were a couple of smudges of yellow on my uniform top. They blended into the camouflage pattern so well I hadn't noticed. And being a two-star general, other people who might have noticed didn't say anything to me about it. A damp wash towel cleared up the stains, and I was back in my chair just as Skippy's avatar unfroze. So I have good news and bad news. Bad news first? You know it. The range of the outsider, based on the extremely limited data set I have, is enough to reach beyond the edge of this galaxy. Oh, shit. No way can we search such a large area. What's the good news? The farther it travels, the slower it will go, because its pattern will begin to lose coherence. It has a pattern? I was right about that? Of course it has a pattern, Knucklehead, otherwise it would just be a loose and harmless blob of nothing. That wasn't any brilliant insight you had. Whatever. Within 9 days, its loss of coherence will cause it to drop out of higher space-time. It will no longer be able to maintain the... Why am I bothering to explain physics to you? I'll say this in a way you might understand. The unicorn it's riding through higher space-time will kick it off, because the outsider will not have enough delicious unicorn treats to feed it. I totally understood that very technical explanation. After it drops into our space-time, it will be limited to light speed. At first, it will be traveling at the speed of light. Gradually, it will slow down as its pattern drags on the underlying fabric of... There is no way I can explain this to you. But don't bother. Can you give me an estimate of how far it can travel before it drops out of warp, or however you describe it? It's not traveling at warp, you... Like, that matters. It's average superluminal... That means faster than light. I am aware of that. I am trained as a pilot, you ass. You keep telling yourself that if it makes you happy. The outsider started with an enormous velocity, over 400 times light speed, but its average speed across the 9 days it can remain in higher space-time is only about 3.27 times light speed, so it could have traveled only about a light month, specifically 29.4 light days, before it must have dropped back into local space-time. A light month. Okay, that's more manageable than searching the entire galaxy. We can get a fleet of sensor pickets here to deploy drones, saturate the area. Do we only need to cover the forward edge of the range bubble? Huh? Is there any chance it will drop into normal space before it traveled a light month? If that's true, then we need to cover the entire area with a sphere that is 2 light months across. It could be anywhere in that sphere. Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, the outsider is smart, so it might anticipate that I can calculate how far it could go, and it would be foolish to act in a predictable fashion. Exactly, and that's not good. Even if we had every starship in the UN Navy, we couldn't cover an area 2 light months across. We don't have to. Yes, we do. No, we don't. Okay, yes, technically the outsider is unlikely to be in the inner part of the sphere, but true, and that is not what I meant. Then you had better check your math, because first, like that is ever gonna happen, he chuckled. Second, we do not have to search the entire sphere. You call yourself a pilot, and I gave you a solid clue. A clue? Give it to me again, please. I said the outsider had a large initial velocity, not speed. Oh,
Velocity is speed plus direction. Exactly. You know the direction it is traveling?
Pretty much, yes.
It would have a limited ability to change that direction based on what I know about how it interacts with physics. So, the search area will be a cone, not a sphere.
We can work with that. The cone will widen out the farther it is from the origin, so we...
Wow! Show! Your grasp of simple geometry is... inspiring. Why are you still such an asshole?
If it ain't broke, he chuckled. Don't fix it.
I had to admit he was right about that, dammit. Our relationship worked well for us, and for the galaxy. It mostly worked for him. But the sad fact was the most important part of my job was keeping him entertained. No, not keep him entertained, though I also did that. Filthy meat sacks of all species across the galaxy kept him constantly entertained with our wacky antics. I had to be his friend, to give him a sense of belonging. That part of my job wasn't difficult. I liked Skippy. What the hell was wrong with me? All right, I stood up. I'll talk with Admiral Wing, ask him to get a search pattern started. Wing was commander of the ships that had been tasked to support the pirates on our mission to engage and kill what we had thought was an Elder AI. He wouldn't like detaching some of his ships to conduct a search, but he was a one-star and I outranked him. Our ship certainly isn't capable of going anywhere right now anyway. Wing's ships can search beginning near the origin point and keep going until a dedicated Navy force can get here. Your Navy won't send all of their ships, Joe. Well, they don't have to. The big battle wagons aren't the best platforms for a search. We need destroyers and frigates, with drones. Lots of drones.
Oh, this is gonna suck, he groaned.
So tedious. I will have to monitor the search effort, collect and analyze all the data.
Pretty much, yes, unless you trust monkeys to do the job.
Dude, as if. Chapter 3. Joe. Skippy gave a drawn-out, exasperated sigh. I have good news and bad news. At this point, some news is better than no news. I stopped walking and stepped into a side passageway. Valkyrie was attached to the star carrier Rio Grande, basically a dead weight on a platform doing nothing while the Third Fleet searched for the outsider. The search had been going on for 5 days. Admiral Sousa had dispatched a courier ship to Earth to request additional ships, both to help find the outsider and to deal with the dangerous thing if we got it cornered. Exactly how the UN Navy could destroy or even damage an energy being was a good question. That was why I had justified Valkyrie hanging around instead of going straight to Earth. We needed Skippy to advise us how to hit the outsider, or possibly for him to smash the thing himself if he could. Whether we got into a fight or not, Skippy's own sensors might be vital to figuring out whether the thing had any weaknesses we could exploit. Yes, well, he sniffed. Do not shoot the messenger. Come on, Skippy, you know I don't do that. Okay, good. Then you... What I do is get pissed when you are obviously gleeful about delivering bad news. You can be assured that won't happen. I am anything but gleeful about this. Go ahead, then. Good news first. Bilby and I have completed the damage assessment report.
Oh, excellent. The damage isn't as bad as we thought?
No. Us completing the report is the good news.
Shit.
Seriously, did you think the report would reveal the ship only needs a fresh coat of paint?
Don't be a jackass. Give me the bad news.
If we bring Valkyrie to Jaguar Base, the shipyard there can have the ship flightworthy again in 28 days.
Wow, that's much faster than I expected.
That is good news. By flightworthy, I mean only capable of extended travel. If you want the ship to be combat ready, that will require 67 days. Plus a week, probably 2 weeks, for shakedown cruises to find and fix all the issues the space dock didn't properly address.
Crap.
Alternatively, if we bring Valkyrie to Earth, the overhaul will be cut to 53 days. Better, but not great. Does that include time for the upgrades?
Yes.
What if we cut out the installing the upgrades, which are vital if you foolishly intend to take the ship into battle against the outsider, will not add any time to the schedule. The upgrades will actually make the post-overhaul shakedown cruise period shorter, since the ship's systems will be better integrated, rather than the patched-together mess Bilby has to deal with today. Why didn't anyone tell me the ship's systems are patched together?
You would know that if you had taken time to qualify as a crewman. Joe, you're supposed to be the mission commander. You should stick to high-level decisions and leave the details to Reed's crew. Okay, but in peacetime, it was expected that Valkyrie wouldn't have to go into action, so upgrades were rolled out only when they were convenient. That is the official story. The reality is DEFCOM did not want me to have the option of getting us into trouble, which admittedly would be more likely if I didn't have to worry about the ship's ability to get me out of trouble. But Valkyrie still was the most powerful ship in the fleet? Yes, but this is because Bilby and I are aboard. As a weapons platform, our mighty battlecruiser has fallen behind. Like I said, the past 6 or so years have been peacetime for you monkeys. Mostly. A major overhaul is long overdue, then. Well, we need to consider borrowing another ship until Valkyrie is fixed. While I agree, no other ship will have a controller AI like Bilby. Can you give me a list of ships you recommend? I'm not as familiar with the Navy as I should be. Can you first give me some idea what you intend to do? Without knowing the mission, I can't select a platform. I mean, should I emphasize range, speed, sensors, throw weight, or some other factor? He stared at me. What? It's just you're using military terms without having to think about it. I have been around the pirates for a long time. Yeah, I keep forgetting that. That was the sad truth. My happy years as commander of the garrison at Jaguar indeed had been happy, in terms of family life and lower stress. During those years, I had paid a price. I had lost part of my mojo, gotten out of the daily rhythm of being a pirate, of always being on edge, always working to get us out of another mess that was inevitably worse than the mess we just escaped from. So far, the outsider hasn't demonstrated any offensive capability of its own. When it fights, it uses the weapons of whatever ships it has captured. So we need to be able to outfight any single warship, including a Rindaloo battleship? That is a tough requirement. We will have you with us. That's true. But first we need to find the damn thing and discover what it plans to do next. So we need a ship that can travel far and fast, with excellent sensors. Then I recommend one of the 7 battlecruisers that are already fielding the Block 4 expansion pack. Expansion pack makes it sound like a video game. Talk to your Navy about it, he rolled his eyes. I don't make up these terms. Oh, this is not good, Skippy groaned as his avatar appeared next to the main bridge display. I was on the bridge taking a shift at the con while Reed met with her senior officers about how to get Valkyrie ready for attaching to a star carrier for the flight to Earth. Maintenance bots were attempting to peel off useless armor plating in the areas where the carrier's hardpoint would latch onto our hull. The first time we attached to the Rio Grande, we basically had relied on high-tech bungee cords, since our standard latching points had melted, and no one was happy with that situation. That job of removing patches of armor was tougher than expected. The powder was congealing into a solid mass, and the underlying layers of plating were sticky, like they had melted and not cooled completely yet. Each bot could only work for a few minutes before it had to return to a maintenance bay to have its manipulator arms scraped clean, and the armor was getting more difficult to work with every hour. The work was going so slowly, I had jokingly volunteered to go outside with a pickaxe and a shovel. Reed hadn't appreciated the attempt at humor. What? I asked as I stood up. Me being in the command chair wasn't exactly just for show, but with the ship unable to move on its own, there wasn't much for me to do. I was there so crew members with actual useful work to do could get on with their tasks. A quick glance at the status board showed nothing alarming. Correction, nothing alarming that was new. A destroyer had jumped in to report on the search for the outsider, but that ship had arrived over 10 minutes before it was late for any important news to be delivered. They found the outsider already? No, and they're not going to, he sighed, disgusted. You might as well tell Admiral Sousa to recall his ships from the search. If you had just discovered the outsider exploded and is dead, you would sound a lot more happy about it, so I'm guessing this is bad news. How often do I deliver good news? Almost never. What's going on? What did the search ships find? They didn't find anything. What they did was jump far enough away from the incident site that photons from half an hour after the battle are just reaching that point. One of the destroyers intercepted an encrypted message from the Maxorks, a ship-to-ship transmission. I just finished decrypting it.
What the enemy was talking about back then wasn't a priority for me, understand? You're very busy, I get it. Skippy, what is the message? The Maxalts are missing a star carrier. That's it? After the battle, they were missing 600 ships. Why do we care about a single space truck? Because that star carrier was not a battle space casualty. It was parked a third of a light year away with a single light cruiser as escort, far beyond the radius of the Elder weapons we deployed. It just disappeared? Could it have jumped to the wrong coordinates? Negative. Okay, so it's a minor mystery. It is not minor, and it's not a mystery at all. Joe, that star carrier was parked exactly in line with the vector the outsider flew when it escaped. Oh, shit, I groaned. Yes, he sighed. We have lost our best opportunity for finding the outsider because it has carjacked a new ride. It has a Maxalt's star carrier now. It could be anywhere. We will never find the damned thing. Several of the skeleton crew on the bridge gasped. Okay, everyone. I held up my hands. This is definitely not great, but trust me, it's also not the worst news we have ever received. Skippy gave me the side eye, which is an annoying thing he had learned in the past couple years. Joe, should I explain this to you again? But slowly? I do understand the situation, thank you. Before the Outsider had a flight-worthy Elder starship, now it is restricted to flying around in a space truck. How much damage can it cause? I should have known better. The Flying Dutchman was a space truck built by a second-tier species, and still the Merry Band of Pirates had caused a lot of damage riding around the galaxy in that awkward, overworked hoopty. I should have kept my big, stupid mouth shut. The director of the Hegemony Research Base, Garshal Venn 6, was instantly alerted by his cranial implant when an unauthorized starship emerged inside the no-fly zone above the planet. The SD network was online and standing by to destroy the intruder, as were Mazer projectors buried under the surface of the airless rock that was designated Garshal Venn 6. The sixth planet of an isolated, otherwise uninhabited star system, the research base was considered a hardship posting. No one wanted to be there. The planet had no virtues. There was nothing special about the place. The star was the reason for constructing a research base in that system. It was an unusually stable red dwarf. Unlike most such stars, Garshal Venn only rarely blasted its companion worlds with hard X-ray flares, and when flares did happen, they were predictable. It wasn't exactly true that no one wanted to be on that rock. The handful of scientists who ran the facility had competed for years for the opportunity to be assigned there, to be given direct access to what made Garshal Venn 6 so intriguing to scientists. Two Elder weapons of the type called Starbreakers. The two weapons had been at the facility for over 40,000 years, and while many generations of Maxalt's researchers had accomplished little in understanding how that type of weapon disrupted stars, the prospect of a breakthrough had thousands of scientists applying every year, seeking the glory for adding to the hegemony's knowledge of Elder weapons. The glory seekers were inevitably disappointed. The facility director took a moment to investigate the intruder, feeling secure under the protection of the Strategic Defense Network. His hesitation was rewarded when the mystery ship transmitted proper hegemony recognition codes and a distress call. It was a Maxalt's star carrier, the Kenefist. The director was a civilian, so that ship was not familiar. The name certainly was infamous. A distress call. Apparently the ship had been in a battle, had suffered damage to its communications system, among other issues. The Canifist's captain requested to remain within the protective envelope of the SD network while the crew completed repairs. 3 days, no more, and the star carrier would jump away. The director was unsure. Allowing an unscheduled, unauthorized ship to linger so close to a high-security facility would be a serious violation of his standing orders. However, the ship had transmitted the proper military codes, and he also had standing orders to provide assistance to military vessels. Besides, the Kandafist was a star carrier, a space truck. Surely it couldn't do any harm. Already the ship was surrounded by maintenance bots swarming around to conduct repairs. Permission was granted. It was the honorable thing to do. It was also a huge mistake. We jumped into the designated emergent zone near Earth. Actually, we didn't do anything. Our battlecruiser was hitching a ride on the star carrier Rio Grande. That space truck twisted the fabric of space-time and dumped us out 16 light seconds from our homeworld. For the event, I was on the bridge, partly to lend moral support to Reed. She was agonizing about the notion of being out of action for months while she guided her ship through the overhaul process. Partly to see Earth again on the main display, and partly to delay UN DEFCOM requesting an uncomfortable private call. Admiral Souza had sent a courier ship ahead of us, bringing the news that our enemy was not a rogue Elder AI. It was something much, much worse. My official report on the incident had been delivered, along with my request for Valkyrie to be given priority in the shipyards. Command was sure to have many questions for me, and for Skippy. I expected those questions to begin with something like, why the fuck hadn't we considered an outsider on the list of our possible adversaries? And the questions to end with, what is your plan to deal with the threat the Elders weren't able to handle? The good news was I had a solid answer for the first question. The second question, not so much. That's interesting. Reed used the controls of her armrest to zoom in on a section of the display. It showed the space dock, and from our viewpoint we could see the back end of a battleship. What our captain was pointing at was not the space dock, it was the thing floating a kilometer away. It looks like we're giving up on the Liberty, Reed noted. She meant the half-finished frame of what was intended to be a cruiser, very publicly advertised as the first starship ever constructed by humanity. I knew that because I had been at the official keel-laying ceremony, which had consisted of a structural frame emerging from a fabricator. The whole ceremony was an embarrassment. The image of a frame coming out of a fabricator had not made a gripping video for the audience on Earth. And the whole story was bullshit anyway. Although the Liberty was indeed being constructed to a new design to optimally fit the UN Navy's requirements, most of the detailed design work had been done by Skippy, with Grumpy taken over while the supreme asshole was away. The critical components that make the cruiser fly and fight would be stripped from other ships, most of them not even modified in any meaningful way. The name Liberty was supposed to signify that humanity would no longer have to rely on capturing, purchasing, or leasing starships. That was a lie. Even before the construction project fell years behind schedule and billions of dollars over budget. Hey, the defense contractors were raking in big bucks, and the Navy justified the continued funding by stating those companies were learning valuable lessons and building our advanced industrial base. Yeah, bullshit. Meanwhile, the Navy was stripping flyable ships for parts to keep other warships online, and the number of ships humanity could rely on decreased at a predictable rate every year. That's why it was actually good to see the unfinished frame not only floating free outside the Milo, it was being cut apart to feed the fabricators. A soft cheer rang around the bridge, quickly dying out as people weren't sure they should be happy about a human failure. Holding a hand at arm's length, I gave a big thumbs up. Now the Navy can focus keeping the ships we have flight-worthy. Hearing me approve of the Liberty being cut up for scrap gave everyone permission to agree. The crew were talking in low voices until Gasquet glared at them for silence. Both of the space docks are occupied, Reed observed, a tone of disappointment in her voice. Yes, Skippy spoke up. But DEFCOM ordered work halted on the battleship we see. Tugs will be removing it within 6 hours, so Valkyrie can go into the Milo space dock for overhaul. I appreciate Command being so proactive. I squeezed a fist. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. It will take weeks just to remove the armor plating. 6 weeks and 4 days, Skippy announced in disgust. That's if nothing goes wrong, and what are the odds of that happening? The problem we discovered while hitching a ride back to Earth was the damaged armor plating had solidified into a super tough shell encasing the ship. Not only were the armor plates stuck to each other, there weren't any layers to the armor. It was a solid mass all the way to the hull, and it was stuck to the hull's anchor points. The armor would have to be cut into all the way down to the hull, then the anchor points detached from the inside. Patching the holes made by removing the anchor points and installing new anchors would add another 8 days to the overhaul schedule. But the real problem was simply removing the armor shell, which was not simple at all. Should Skippy have anticipated the Elder weapons would turn Valkyrie's armor into a sort of chrysalis, and what would emerge from the shell was not a beautiful butterfly, but the naked exposed hull of a starship that needed months of work just to fly again? Maybe he should have anticipated that might be a result of deploying Elder weapons around our position. He couldn't have known it would happen because of the unpredictable nature of Elder weapons themselves. They activated in a state of quantum flux, something like that. Professor Skippy enthusiastically tried to explain the physics to me. My brain checked out at hearing the scary phrase quantum uncertainty. A bit of unknown was built into each Elder weapon, so the intended target could never know exactly how to encounter the effects. The result for us was Valkyrie's hull got what Skippy called the shake-and-bake treatment. Although heat wasn't the actual cause of the armor melting, turning into a crumbling powder, then solidifying into a hard and super-tough crystalline form. The engineering team had geeked out about the cool new type of more effective armor, until Reed ordered them to work with Skippy on developing a process to remove all the armor. The only technique that had worked was plasma-cutting torches, and that process was agonizingly slow. Even with the full resources of a shipyard, Skippy estimated more than 6 weeks, possibly 10 weeks, just to pull the ship out of the hardened, sticky mess. Reed's fear, a fear I shared, was that DEFCON would decide that tying up a shipyard for 3 or more months just to rebuild one ship was not a prudent use of resources during a crisis. Privately, I agreed with what I expected Command to tell me. Valkyrie was a mighty, valiant ship. No one could deny that. No one could deny that our battlecruiser might have survived its last battle. That's something I didn't want to think about. General Bishop, the communications officer behind me called. Command wants to speak with you ASAP. Reed, I'll be in my office for the call, then I'll need a ride dirtside. I'll have a dropship prep for you, sir.
Joe!
Skippy shouted in my earpiece as I was leaving my cabin, dressed in a fresh uniform, an overnight bag packed for the trip dirtside.
What is it? I'm busy. A shuttle is waiting.
I know! Listen! He lowered his voice, though he was talking only into my earpiece.
A bot is on the roll to your cabin. I just need you to wait a minute.
Command wants my boots on the ground ASAP.
Not a problem. The P in ASAP means possible, and right now a dropship launch is not possible.
Oh? Why not? Traffic control should have cleared a lane for—
Traffic control isn't the issue. The docking bay doors are jammed.
Okay, I'm sure Reed is aware and has prepped a dropship in another bay.
Those doors are also jammed.
Stepping back inside my cabin, since the door sensor was beeping at me for blocking the doorway, I set down my overnight bag. Skippy, what is going on?
Huh?
His attempted innocence would win him the Worst Supporting Actor award.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Doors get jammed, Joe. Especially when someone throws the ship into an easy bake oven that is powered by a supernova.
Can we play the blame game later? Right now I need to go talk to Command before they find a new list of things to be angry at me about.
Like that isn't going to happen anyway. Listen, I have a package that needs to go down to your miserable mud ball of a homeworld pronto. When the bot gets to your cabin, just take the box with your carry-on luggage.
Despite me knowing you are a paragon of virtue, this sounds suspicious. Why do you need me to bring the... whatever? There will be a regular cargo flight in a few hours.
The manifest of cargo runs get inspected when they get dirtside. No one will dare inspect your personal items.
Thank you. That explanation completely eliminated any concern I have that this might be something sketchy I don't want to be involved in.
Oh, goody. So, that was sarcasm, you ass.
What is in this mystery box?
Well, don't look inside it, dum-dum. That will ruin the... Oh, too late. The bot is here.
Before he could turn the bot around to race away from, I grabbed the plastic container. It was like a small carry-on suitcase with two latches on one side. Flopping the box on my couch, I placed my thumbs on the latches.
Last chance. You want to tell me what's in here, or do I find out for myself and have this tossed in the recycler?
Do I have to?
He whined.
I gave you a choice. 3, 2, okay! It's art.
Art? Like paintings and stuff?
Every great artist is thrilled to hear their cherished labors of love described as paintings and stuff.
Whatever. Okay, why didn't you tell me? Painting is a new outlet for your creativity. This is a good thing. Really, I was pleased he had found something new to occupy his time so he wouldn't bother me as much.
Wait. Are your paintings, like, of me in a clown suit?
No.
Please, you would think I would paint clowns? Although, that is a great idea for...
No, it is a terrible idea. Flipping up the latches, I saw rolled-up canvases. Not paper, some kind of cloth. Unrolling the first one on my coffee table, I weighed down the corners with coffee mugs and a pair of shoes.
Joe, you barbarian, do not get coffee stains on my precious work of art!
These cups are clean. This is interesting.
You like it?
I don't think a dumb monkey like me can truly appreciate your sweeping artistic vision. What is this supposed to be?
What does it look like to you?
It's... I searched for a word that wouldn't insult him. Abstract? If I was being truthful, I would have said it was crap. Random squiggles of color, like if a group of hyperactive first graders revved up on chocolate milk had been told to use up a box of crayons.
Abstract? Good. Good, I will use that.
I can't quite grasp what, vision you're conveying here.
That's the point, dum-dum. The vision is in the eye of the beholder!
So this doesn't actually mean anything to you? What were you imagining when you painted this thing?
I wasn't imagining anything. I outsourced the job to the Fabricator Submines. I am much too busy to waste time with crap like that.
The Fabricator did this?
Yes. You know that between jobs, the fabs need to be recalibrated, so they create samples?
Yeah, some other system inspects the samples to make sure the fabricators are producing quality output.
Uh-huh. Well, as the fabs are gearing up to make a sample, I had them crank out some artwork for me. Damn, some of the art they make is disturbing. I should probably review those submines when I have time.
Explain this, please. This art isn't yours, so why are you so eager to get it down to earth?
You really want to know?
I suspect I really don't want to know, but you're trying to get me involved, so tell me what is really going on, or all this crap goes in the recycler.
Fine. Remind yourself later that you insisted on an explanation. It's a simple scheme for bribery, money laundering, and tax evasion.
Oh, well, nothing for me to worry about then.
Wow. I hoped you would be cool about it, but I knew it was you, so I worried that I am anything but cool about this. Ugh. How could you bribe anyone with this amateur crap? I'm not bribing anyone. Monkeys down there are bribing me. Listen, I'll try to break this down Barney style for you. The fabs up here crank out this random crap. I call this series of paintings Quantum Visions. That doesn't mean anything, but it sounds good. People who want favors from me buy these paintings at wildly inflated prices, and since they are getting a genuine Skippy original, the authorities can't prove bribery was involved.
There is nothing genuine about any of this.
Well, don't tell anyone, you moron. It took me years to establish this scheme.
Do I want to know how the money laundering and tax evasion part works?
You wouldn't understand it, so why do you care about evading taxes? Skippistan is a sovereign nation. Could you be more dim-witted? I help other people evade the crushing burden of taxes, and I keep a cut of the savings for myself. It's the circle of life. Hey, I'm like Robin Hood. I take from the rich and I give even more back to them. It's a win-win for everyone.
That is not what Robin Hood did.
Whatevs.
Why should I do this?
I can cut you in for a generous 0.1%. What I want is you to cut me out of this. As far as you know, all you are doing is transporting personal items. The only thing I need you to do is give the box to one of your dirtside security detail, a Master Sergeant Gostovsky.
Gostovsky, the sergeant who ran the black market on Jaguar?
You know him? Great! He's a master sergeant now and my local contact. Just give the box to him. He knows what to do.
I don't like this, Skippy.
Come on, Joe, it's for the children.
What children?
I don't know. Gostovsky has children. Is that good enough?
Rolling up the painting, I stuffed it in the box.
Do not ask for me to do this again. I wouldn't ask you to do it this time, except I don't have a choice. Usually, I launch a stealth drone with my artwork as a payload, but Colonel Killjoy has locked down all the launch tubes.
I had to repeat his words in my head because I didn't believe it.
Reed usually allows you to use a stealth drone?
Of course not. She would never approve of using shipboard assets for one of my schemes. Then how do you launch a drone without anyone noticing?
You are aware that I am Skippy the Magnificent.
All I have to do is tell the sensors to ignore the launch of a drone or a missile or whatever I need to use based on whatever planet we're visiting. You do this shit at other planets also? Of course. Everyone wants to bribe me to do favors for them. I call bullshit on that. The inventory will still show a drone or missile is missing.
It's cute when you say things like that. No one ever goes into the magazines to do a hand count of the munitions, numbskull.
The weapons loadout we have in the inventory records is not accurate? We have fewer missiles and drones than we're supposed to have?
If I say yes, is that something that might incriminate me?
Oh, my. I can't believe you would do this.
Oh, come on, you little baby. It's not like we have ever used every single missile. I just keep shuffling the weapons so the ones that I use are supposedly at the far end of the magazine. When the ship swaps out munitions, I designate some units as defective so they can be cannibalized for parts. No one has ever noticed munitions are missing, so don't you rat me out.
Rat you out? Skippy, you can't confess to a crime and then ask the police not to use it against you. When Valkyrie finishes repairs and upgrades, I want every item in the inventory to be accurate, and it has to stay that way.
You can't be serious. It took me years to set up this scheme. There are thousands of meat sacks who depend on a cut of my action. How am I supposed to...
That's your problem. Have the fabricators crank out dedicated stealth drones for you.
It's not that easy, numbskull.
And you provide the raw materials out of your own pocket, have them delivered to the ship, and you pay the Navy for storage aboard the ship.
This is outrageous!
You know, the latches on this box are kind of flimsy. It would be a shame for the box to fall open before I hand it to Gostovsky, if yous know what I mean. The paintings would get scattered all over the airfield, and that would cause a lot of questions.
Ugh.
Consider this to be you bribing me.
Ah, whatever. I can't get emotional about this. It's a cost of doing business. Just bring the thing dirtside and we can pretend this conversation never happened.
What conversation? Reed was in the docking bay to give me an official send-off. She snapped a crisp salute.
It has been an honor serving with you again, sir.
Returning the salute, I shook my head. This isn't a farewell, Fireball.
It is for a while, sir. I expect to be here for months babysitting Valkyrie while the shipyard works its magic.
She didn't say what she was really thinking. That her current command would likely be parked in the boneyard at the L2 LaGrange point behind the moon with all the other decommissioned ships that were serving as orbiting spare parts sources for the Navy. Part of me hoped the Navy would not take Valkyrie apart. It would be good public relations for the fleet to set aside our once mighty ghost ship as a museum. But the UN Navy was not sentimental. Couldn't afford to be. The Flying Dutchman had been transformed into an assault carrier rather than being preserved as a memorial. That was a different situation. The Dutchman had been modified so many times, little of the original parts were left unaltered. That ship's original bridge and combat information center complex had been removed and was on display in Colorado Springs. I suppose that was good enough as a tribute to the space truck that was humanity's first starship. Besides, the Dutchman's AI was still active. Nagatha was still flying as an assault carrier. That was a better fate than being stuck in a dusty museum display.
Reed, I'll see what I can do about accelerating the repairs.
She leaned closer, speaking softly.
Please don't pull rank on my behalf, sir. The Navy will need all hands on deck to respond to the outsider.
All hands includes Bilby.
Sir, I'm not making any promises one way or the other, Captain.
You can be assured I won't give Valkyrie priority over keeping my family safe.
Thank you. Best of luck.
The ride down to Earth wasn't as rough as I feared. The pilots twisted the Panther's tail after they received clearance from the Star Carrier, and my chest was compressed at 3 times the force of Earth's gravity for a few minutes. Only a few minutes. Then the pilots throttled back to half a G.
Sorry about the G-force, sir, the pilot said as he leaned back to talk with me. We had to clear the emergent zone. Traffic control expects more ships coming in soon.
I'm used to it, Lieutenant. Give me a heads up before we go into zero G.
That will be in about 37 minutes, General.
Chapter 4. Ottavio Scarandum, formerly Admiral Scarandum of the Jarapta Ethics and Compliance Office, was currently without rank, without a job,
and without any sort of official citizenship other than his prepaid subscription to the Glorious People's Republic of Skippistan. He did, however, have funds, a substantial amount of fundage, even after he had paid the extortionary amount demanded by Captain Gumbano of the Free Trader ship back in the game. Gumbano had acted shocked at every turn, as if it was the first time that a bankrupt ECO admiral sought for arrest by the Office of Special Inquiries and facing serious prison time had defected to the enemy and cut a possibly treasonous deal to pay off his enormous mountain of debts. Although, to be fair, Scarandum was indeed the first Jarraptha to flee prosecution in that particular manner, and there was no question that his government would never have agreed to him selling damaging secrets to the Maxulks, so Gumbano had a point. But the mercenary captain had pretended to be offended that he was asked to participate in criminal activity, even though Scarandum himself had paid Gumbano to do exactly that many times over the years. What bothered Utavio was not the truly outrageous amount the back-in-the-game's captain had demanded for safe passage to the Jarraptha resort world of Plazastria, for the amount had actually been less than Utavio expected, and certainly far less than he had been ready to pay. Really, perhaps Gumbano was slipping, leaving money on the table like that. Or perhaps the back-in-the-game's crew had just been anxious to rid themselves of a passenger who might be more trouble than he was worth. By law, the Free Trader ship should have delivered Utavio directly to the nearest Jarraptha authorities. But dropping him off at a luxury resort world, and then Gumbano himself quietly informing the local Inquisitor representative about the presence of a dangerous and famous wanted criminal was, good enough. That had been 4 days previous, with days being reckoned in local time. Three glorious tropical sunsets had been observed as the local star dipped below the warm water of the placid ocean. 4 days of relaxing, consuming fine food and drink, swimming, flying above the beach on a powered parasail, and enjoying delightful female companionship, which reminded him as he adjusted himself on the lounger with the umbrella automatically moving to keep him shaded to the perfect level. He needed to contact last night's companion, whose name he couldn't quite recall at that moment, to see whether she would be interested in meeting him for dinner on the airship that chased the setting sun. That airship was a delight, allowing passengers to view the local sun setting up to 4 times before the airship turned around and it was time for music and dancing. Of course she would be interested in accompanying him for such a dinner, but he had to go through the motions of asking. Dinner reservations at the last minute would not be an issue. He had reserved a table for 5 nights in a row, with a deposit large enough that the airship's crew need not care whether he showed up or not. Yes, it was nice to have money again, though money easily gained was also easily lost, as the local central wagering office could attest. Utavio had been unlucky in wagers since he landed on Plazastria, damnably unlucky, more than usual. Lazily, he lifted the glass of some fruity cocktail that had a small, brightly colored balloon tied to the straw. It was supposedly a local favorite that the bartender claimed had been invented at that very beach resort. That was very probably a lie. All Utavio knew for certain was that he enjoyed the drink very much, and he was dismayed when he sucked on the straw and only heard slurping sounds. Where had the drink gone? That was a mystery, as was how he had not been arrested yet. Surely the Inquisitors knew he was back in their territory. The only explanation was the local Inquisitor had been instructed to stand by, monitor the disgraced former admiral, and await the arrival of higher authorities. The question was, where were they? He had seen no sign of... There. Low in the western sky, a distinctive flash. A ship jumping into orbit. Based on the intensity of the flash, the ship had arrived closer than the designated emergent zone. So, military, or some other branch of the government, such as the Office of Special Inquiries. Whipping out a phone, he checked it and sprang into action. Tap, 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 send. Oh, he had almost been too late. How could he have been so careless? The lunchtime happy hour, when drinks were 2 for the price of 1, was nearly finished. He had gotten his drink order in just before the time expired. The second of the happy hour drinks arrived, the timing having been triggered by a sensor in his lounger that detected the first glass was empty and the ice was melting, and Utavio was just taking a sip when he saw the contrail high in the sky arcing over the beach. Shortly, he heard the distinctive rumble of a sonic boom. Guests and staff on the beach looked up, startled. No air or spacecraft were allowed to fly supersonic over the beaches. That was a rule. Yes, the incoming dropship was definitely military. He recognized the configuration when he magnified the view on his phone. The pilot was either naturally a jackass or had been ordered to make a dramatic arrival, for the spacecraft roared over the beach toward the ocean, swung around, and flew low as it approached the shore again. Low enough for the engine's thrust to ruffle beach umbrellas, which automatically adjusted to the sudden gusty air by partially folding until the disturbance was gone. Guests were indignant at the interruption of their very exclusive and very expensive holiday, and staff attempted to mollify them as best they could. Scarandum played along, suggesting that a free drink would greatly improve his mood. Abbott delivered a drink almost before he settled back into the lounger. He was starting to relax again when a murmur behind him became something he could no longer ignore or even pretend to ignore. Turning around in the lounger, he... Oh, you have got to be kidding me. In the lead were two soldiers in powered armor, the boots of the mechanical suits having to spread out so the heavy armor didn't sink into the soft beach sand and disappear. Not only were the soldiers wearing full infantry combat kit, they carried rifles in their claws rather than the powerful weapons being slung. Rifles with their muzzles aimed at the ground, and the claws were safely away from the trigger mechanisms, but it was all just so overly dramatic and unnecessary. The crowd on the beach, curious and then alarmed by the dropship setting down in a field behind the resort, had become anxious upon seeing the soldiers. Many people were gathering their things to leave the beach when the crowd froze and fell silent. Behind the soldiers was a figure, dressed in the robes of an inquisitor, and wearing the fringed hat of an arbiter. No one ever wanted to see an arbiter. Scarandum was sipping his free drink when the two soldiers, heavy suits stomping hard enough to cause ripples in the sand, came up from behind the lounger and flanked him. He had been wrong. The two figures were no soldiers, not attached to the military at all. Former military, that was certain. The Office of Special Inquiries recruited their internal security goon squad force from the military, and the military was always glad to be rid of them, for the Inquisitors recruited only the most inflexible, sanctimonious assholes to become their enforcers. The claws were still not on the triggers of the rifles, but were uncomfortably close to activating the weapons. He was in danger. He put the straw to his mouth and took a loud, bubbling sip. Arbiter? He raised the glass to toast the robed figure who stepped between him and the ocean, backlit by the sun. To what do I owe this pleasure? While you're here, you must try one of these drinks. They call it a frothy sunrise, and it... Another figure dressed in Inquisitor's robes stepped into view. Scarandum clacked his mandibles together. Kinsta, how delightful it is to see you. By the time the director of the Garshall Venn 6 research facility realized there was a problem, it was too late to do anything about it. The Star Carrier launched three dropships without notice, by itself nothing alarming, though it was a violation of traffic control regulations. Dropships were sometimes used for moving large, bulky items during maintenance cycles, so the SD network had not sent a priority alert until the dropships accelerated hard toward the planet. The base communications system sent increasingly strident warnings to the dropships and to the Canifest, receiving no reply and no compliance. At that point, concerned more about his career than about the lives of the Star Carrier's crew, the director ordered the strategic defense system to fire a warning shot into the bow of the Canifest. A single, low-powered maser beam, still powerful enough to cause damage, to enforce compliance, hopefully without need for further violence. The SD network acknowledged his command, and did nothing. The ground-based defenses likewise accepted his command to fire, acknowledged his authority, and did nothing. That was when he received a flash priority warning that the internal anti-personnel defense system had activated at the research lab, the facility that contained the pair of Elder weapons. Toxic nerve gas quickly killed everything living in the lab, with the director powerless to override the unauthorized action. Worse, the laboratory's external defenses, the extensive anti-aircraft weapons that could have destroyed the three approaching dropships, were offline. Someone intended to steal the Starbreakers. To his horror, the director understood his fatal error. He had allowed an unknown entity to linger within communications range, and therefore within hacking range of the base. The defenses were down hard. No, only the automated defenses were down. He still had a squad of security guards. They could go outside in powered armor to shoot down the incoming dropships with portable missiles. They could do nothing. Because at that moment, 4 SD network satellites turned around and blasted the base headquarters complex, leaving a wide, smoking crater. Of course, after half an hour in zero gravity, my squishy meat sack body decided I was bloated with too much water, so I had to use the dropship's bathroom. The good news was Panthers had been designed and built by the Maxalts, who were larger than humans, so I didn't have to crouch or bang my knees. And of course, my phone beeped while I was using the complicated zero-G facilities. If the call had been from DEFCOM, I would have ignored it, but it was from Dr. Friedlander. I answered the call with, "What's up, Doc?" That was the joke that I had started using when he was at my wedding. Tequila might have been involved, I don't remember. "How's the family?" "Good, we're good. How is your family?" We talked about our spouses, our children, mostly our children. He had a lot more experience with being a father, so he wasn't freaked out about stuff that bothered me. "Don't let Skippy interfere with your boys," he advised. "They're smart. They might be a bit too mature for their age. What they need is to develop normally as children." "I hear that." Margaret limits Skippy's contact with them. From my chair in the cabin, I read the bulkhead display. We're going to begin a deceleration burn in 19 minutes. It would be good to catch up with you when I get dirtside. I don't know what my schedule will be for the next few days."
"Well, I didn't call just to chat. You know I'm still a consultant as a technical resource for the Navy."
"Yeah. There isn't much I can tell you about the outsider. That's
not what I meant. Grumpy informed me the major schedule block for overhauling Valkyrie is removing the armor."
"Yes. It's protecting the ship a bit too well now. The pirates and I will need to select a new ride."
"Have you considered using Bubba?"
Sentinels can travel, but they're not a starship.
We need Bubba here anyway to protect Earth, and
no, not use Bubba instead of a starship. Use Bubba to remove Valkyrie's armor.
I understood how Skippy felt when I mentioned some incredibly obvious idea he hadn't thought of.
"A sentinel could do that?
You tell me. I can't tell you anything about it. Skippy, have you been listening?"
"Of course not," the beer can snorted. "You nag me all the time about not violating people's precious privacy," he gagged.
"Uh-huh. Hey, hypothetically, if you had been listening, would you have an answer for the good doctor?"
"Well, hypothetically, if I had heard a question about Bubba stripping off the baked-on armor plating, I would have to think about it."
"Would you think and yield any results?"
"Yes. First, I don't know why I bothered to ask you to solve any problem. Dr. Friedlander, that is a brilliant, truly inspired idea."
"It will work." Friedlander was as surprised as I was. "Without destroying the ship?"
"Oh, it could work if Bubba is very careful. We will have to cut through the hull from the inside to remove the anchor points. Otherwise, Bubba could rip the hull apart as it is peeling away the armor."
"You estimated more than 6 weeks to remove the armor the hard way. How much time could Bubba save us?"
"Bubba could have that armor off in an hour."
"An hour?"
Friedlander was astonished. "Come on, Skippy." I was skeptical. "That can't be possible. You are aware Bubba is a sentinel, right?"
"Yeah, but..."
"Inform Captain Reed that she should begin cutting away the attachment anchors for the armor from the inside, and her non-essential crew should evac to the Rio Grande as soon as is practical. The entire crew needs to be off the ship and at a distance of at least 30,000 kilometers before Bubba begins removing the armor."
"Skippy, wait. We can't do anything without clearance. The Rio Grande needs to clear the emergent zone anyway before Valkyrie can detach, and then it will take a while for tugs to move the ship to a safe distance."
"Joe, you're not listening to me. We don't need tugs. Bubba will handle moving Valkyrie. Just get the crew off and detach from the hardpoint."
"I do hear you, and I don't like the idea of a giant killing machine moving a ship by itself. Traffic control and the Coast Guard will hate the idea."
"But,
I will talk with Reed, but this isn't my call. Valkyrie isn't my ship, and the Navy controls the shipyards."
I can control a shipyard and get everything moving much faster than their native AIs can handle, he sniffed. Just chill, okay? But, Skippy, DEFCOM still thinks you are reckless and have no respect for the chain of command. One of those is certainly true, he muttered. Ignoring him, I continued with, This is an opportunity for you to present a plan for an accelerated overhaul so the proper authorities can make the decision. The only intelligent decision is obvious. Well, if it's that obvious, even monkeys could see it. Ah, damn your logic. Okay, we'll do it your way. Thanks. Then it's the stupid way, but that's what you want. The first question I got from the Joint Chiefs was as expected. Why hadn't I anticipated that the Moon Raider might be the outsider? Sir, I addressed my response to Admiral Singh, the current chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Based on the information we had, there wasn't an outsider in this galaxy, and there never was. The Elders blocked that entity from entering space around the Milky Way. Then they constructed an elaborate security system to assure no outsider ever could get here. The barrier, Singh said, that surrounds this galaxy? Yes, sir. A barrier none of us have ever seen. That question did surprise me. That is true, sir. Has Skippy seen it? Wisely, the beer can was staying out of the discussion unless he was directly called upon, as I requested. No, it's too far away. He only knows the information that was programmed into him by the Elders.
So they could have made up a nice bedtime story about a barrier that keeps the monsters away.